If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tasteofchicago.com to order today.
Try it again, Colin. Let's see if Eric is there. Mr. Zorn, do you hear us?
Yes, I think I do. Do you hear me?
Yeah, you sound good. Eric, how are you?
I'm good. Happy New Year to you. And you asked me, I could hear you. You couldn't hear me. I put out one issue on Thursday. It's my big one, the Big Picayune Sentinel. And that is free to everybody. And then I do a special for subscribers only on Tuesday. It includes letters from readers, my responses, sometimes a news commentary. And then there's usually a poll where I put some funny things that I found online, funny pictures I found online, and that people to vote which one they think is the funniest, things like that on Tuesday.
It's interesting to me when you do those exchanges and publish the back and forths between you and your subscribers, people who are maybe giving you money for the subscription, how much crap you give them and how much crap they give you.
Well, it's good give and take. I ran a blog at the Tribune when I was at the Tribune for many years, and the comment sections were open, and so anyone could come in, and it was very contentious and testy. And as far as comment threads go, I think my comment thread is about as civil and productive a comment thread as you'll find outside of maybe Capital Facts, Rich Miller's blog down in Springfield, where he really keeps a tight rein on his commenters and they have a good productive conversation. But generally, you know, newspapers and blogs and so on and newsletters have really restricted their comment areas because they get so nasty so quickly. And mine is not. I mean, you say we're tough on each other, but I feel like, yeah, and I do. I welcome dissenting views. I think they're really interesting. But I push back, and I don't want to say thank you for your opinion. I'll say I don't agree with you, and here's why. And then they'll usually come back. And I think those kind of exchanges are good. And it is almost always done with some respect and civility, which I really appreciate.
I don't argue that at all. I said what I said, but what you said is also true. But I think it's interesting sometimes because it would be easy for somebody in your shoes to get a little sheepish about calling someone to task or telling them they're wrong or pushing back since they're sort of paying for the service. You don't want to alienate sponsors or subscribers. You artfully walk right up to that line. You know who also has a good comment section in the articles is The Atlantic. It seems like, you know, really bright people are engaged there as they are on your site. And just one last observation about all of this, Eric, and that is that was Luigi Mangione, the guy who shot allegedly, the CEO of United Healthcare. Some of the comment sections and publications are discontinued for articles about him because it's so damn bizarre about what people are saying, how they're cheering this guy on.
Yeah, that you see that a lot in comment sections. One of the reasons I like the Tribune got rid of comments in general is that they became so really racist really quickly. Any crime story, the commenters came out, and there was a lot of anonymous people being really racist, and it was just ugly. At some point, it just be like, this isn't a good conversation. If you want to have a conversation about crime in the city and so on, but it turned so ugly so quickly. And again, with this Luigi Mangione story, at some point, you're just having people seeming to cheer on violence and assassination as a solution to our problems, and at some point, a publication needs to shut that down because it becomes unclear to readers if the publication of the comment in some way implies an endorsement or at least saying that it is in bounds. And sometimes you use as a publication, you want to say, oh, that comment is out of bounds. I got to say that in about 2.5 years now of doing comments on the Picayune Sentinel, I've had to remove maybe two or three that I thought were out of bounds. A lot of them that I don't agree with, but that doesn't mean they're out of bounds. I mean, they only cross the line every once in a while. And that was not at all true with my Tribune blog, where it was wide open, and I had to go in pretty regularly and get people out, or even block them, which I hate to do because I mean I feel like blocking somebody is it's not literally censorship, but it feels like it. It feels like it's trying to suppress a point of view, and generally I feel like most points of view need to be heard.
Speaking of boundaries, it is interesting how this issue of Luigi Mangione is being handled on Saturday Night Live. I didn't watch it, the last episode, but the two previous were post-shooting. And in each case, references to Mangione came up, and in each case, the audience cheered the very mention of his name. And then Colin Jost, if nobody else, sort of looks at them like, oh, shame on you, but clearly he's playing the game and getting away with it. But that's SNL, so I suppose that's inbounds in their case.
Yeah, I was a little uncomfortable with that one that you're referring to, or Colin. I can't remember the exact line, but I remember feeling like SNL set that up, and then they just allowed Colin Jost to say, oh, no, shame on you for that. But they set up that audience.
100%. 100%.
They knew that was going to happen. So.
At the beginning of this conversation, where we weren't able to engage with you right away, Eric, I mentioned that maybe the next time somebody decides to run for mayor of Chicago or anywhere, don't campaign on I won't raise property taxes. I know it's hard to get elected by saying I might, but by the same token, you may have to. And that's true for taxes and fees in general anyway. But property taxes arguably are a reasonable way to raise revenue if you have a budget shortfall. Anyway, I'm wondering what your thought about that is.
Well, exactly. But the problem is, I'm trying to remember which presidential election it was where the Republicans may have been Bush won. Read my lips, no new taxes. And I believe Dukakis was running against him, right? And Dukakis said, the difference between us is, he says he won't raise your taxes, and I tell you that I will. Now, it may have been Mondale who said that, but I just can't remember. It goes way back, but there was definitely an election where the Democratic candidate said, I'm being honest with you, I'm probably going to raise your taxes. And the Republican was saying, I won't raise your taxes. And the Republican won and then raised taxes. But everyone said, well, that just shows that when you're campaigning, you have to make this promise you're not going to raise taxes. And then you'll have to say, well, who knew that things were so bad?
Yeah.
And the coffers are still low, and this is desperate times. Yeah, I thought that was really irresponsible of Johnson to promise it. So.
Well, but was it also irresponsible then for him to try and raise property taxes 300, 150, 65 million? What was it? What was the number they came up with? Was it around 65?
It was 68, yeah.
Yeah.
It was so we started at 300 and everybody said no, no, no. And he went to 150 and everybody said no, no, no. And then he went to 68 and now it's down to zero. And they're doing things like tomorrow you're going to be paying an extra 3 cents for your shopping bag.
I noticed. I was at the Mariano's and I got that thing when I went to check out. It said, if you're buying a bag, know that the 7 cent bag will now be 10 cents. I wonder what the. What have we concluded about 7 cents or maybe 10 cents? For instance, if it was a dollar a bag, I'll bet everybody would be bringing in their own reusable canvas bags. They don't. A lot of people do, but there's still plenty of 7 and 10 cent bags going out the door and into landfills and on the side of the highways and into Lake Michigan. And I hate to see that. But I don't know that an extra 3 cents is necessarily going to change behavior. And I suppose the city hopes it doesn't. They want that extra 3 cents, right?
Well, that's the irony. It's like putting up those speed cameras saying, oh, all we want to do is have people stop speeding. But you look on their budget and they say that they're counting on $11 million more dollars from these new speed cameras. So they know people are going to speed. They kind of want people to speed because they need the money. And they're going to need the money from this bag tax. I think it's was it $5 million? I can't remember what the projection was for the extra money on the bag tax. But yeah, you're right. If you raise that bag tax to, say, 30 cents a bag, I think a lot of people would start bringing their own canvas bags or recycling their plastic bags that they use, or even doing what I've done occasionally when I run low on bags is I'll just throw the extra groceries in my cart and then take them out to the car, put them in the back of the car, and I'll just bring a bag in. And it's not because I'm so cheap about 7 cents, but it's kind of the principle of the thing. Like I shouldn't be paying for shopping bags. I don't need to do that. And also I don't want to use a plastic shopping
bag. But as a result, you'll sometimes see me walking to my car with the strangest things in my hands. Like I'll be walking in the parking lot with a bottle of wine, a bag of pears, and some dishwashing soap, you know? And I'm like, I didn't need a bag. I didn't bring a bag. Damn it. I'm not going to do that. So I'll just scoop it up in my arms and walk out. That's me often, more often than it should be.
And I'm sure the paparazzi have a lot of fun with John Williams in a parking lot with a bottle of wine in his hand.
The funny thing is, I'm not exaggerating. I'll bet we have 100 reusable bags in our property, in our cars, but never the one I'm taking. somewhere. You know, we have spent a lot of money on bags over the last few years, and yet I will somehow be at the grocery store, look in the back, and go, "Oh hell, they're in the garage. What was I thinking?"
Yeah, no, it's definitely the case, and we try to keep both cars of ours filled with bags so that we don't have that happen. But inevitably, we show up at the store and there's no bags. But I think, you know, over the years, I'm guessing maybe we paid $5 or $10 in bag fees over the years, and only a couple of pennies. You know, I think 5 cents of that went to the city. Now it's going to be 9 out of every 10 cents goes to the city. That the retailers are getting a penny less for every bag, and they're not happy about it.
It's funny, though, because it's so piecemeal. I mean, like, a property tax would have pretty much in one fell swoop handled a lot of this. But now it's $12 million here because you're going to pay an extra percent or two on Netflix to the city. Imagine that. And they weren't able to pass the liquor increase, but you do have it on the grocery bags. It's just like this menu of all of these little things that will add up. Right, Eric?
Yeah, well, that's what their idea was. They would, almost literally nickel and diming. In the case of the bag, it is actually a dime they're charging. They're nickel and diming us to try to make up that shortfall. And, you know, I am a property owner in Chicago. I would have paid more in property taxes if that had gone through. But I do think that it is a more progressive way to raise money than to do it through shopping bags. I mean, because, you know, a lot of times people who need bags, most of all, are people who don't have cars. And so I do think that the property tax, because it does hit higher end homes harder than it hits lower end homes, which is a dollar value, was a more progressive way to do that. But there's something about property taxes that just are considered to be completely third rail in a city like Chicago. So we don't do that. But it's not unthinkable to me to raise property taxes as opposed to trying to raise all these little fees and put in speed cameras and other things that may end up hitting lower income people harder than middle income and upper income people.
Eric Zorn's on the line. He publishes the Picayune Sentinel. It's a local newsletter that tackles local issues, the national ones as well. He's a member of the Mincing Rascals podcast, of course. And Eric also has predictions for 2024 and 2025 worth reviewing in a minute. We got about 4 or 5 more minutes with Eric Zorn, the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. Eric, in your Substack newsletter, the Picayune Sentinel, you talk about predictions. You have the 2024 predictions that were made at the end of 23. Is that right?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I do. You said, among other things, the area's major daily newspapers would not abandon print. So we still have the Daily Herald, the Tribune, and the Sun-Times. You got that one right. Kudos to you. You had Donald Trump would be the Republican nominee for president. Were you confident of that?
Trump would, at the time, a year ago, yeah, I was pretty confident about that. That seemed really likely to me at that
time. Are these predictions the aggregate of your readers or you personally?
So what I did a year ago, and I did it again today, I put out a questionnaire. There's approximately 40 questions where you got to sort of see what you can guess about the news of the coming year. And then I compare those with the hive mind, the readers guess. I get, you know, 400 or 500 votes on this. People weigh in, and then I tally those, and then I compare their predictions, the consensus of the readers, with my predictions. And once again, the readers beat me in predicting the news a little bit. They did a little bit better than I did. But I look at the landscape, and I say, well, what do I think is going to happen? This year's quiz, a lot of things are just going to be about whether Donald Trump is going to follow through on any of his promises. Or his threats, whatever, when he talks about, is he going to pardon or grant clemency to 1,000 or more people who are charged in connection with the January 6th, 2021 attack? Or is he going to try to get rid of birthright citizenship? Or is he going to try to get rid of daylight saving time? Or is he going to try to grab Greenland from Denmark? Is he going to try to, all the little things that he's talked about doing?
Right, but some of those might be hard to score. Like, yeah, he's going to try to get rid of all the migrants, but how do you score the success of that?
Well, I put a threshold at 2 million. There's about 1 million undocumented immigrants who are repatriated or, who are deported every year. And I said, is it going to be 2 million or more? Which would indicate a significant surge in deportations. Is he going to do that? Right now, a small percentage of people, about 30%, people are saying that he's not going to do that. This is a question of is he going to get rid of income taxes on overtime pay? Is he going to try to get the Panama Canal back? Is he going to try to replace Obamacare? All these kind of questions that he has talked about doing. I mean, that me, those are the major questions, the major known unknowns.
Right. But I would also offer that the easiest to score will be, you ask, will Pete Hegseth be defense secretary? Does Kash Patel become FBI? Does Tulsi Gabbard get national intelligence? Does RFK Jr. get health and human services? Of those four, how many of those, give me a number, how many of those you think actually get the positions they're seeking?
Well, I think Kash Patel and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. are pretty solid in terms of, you know, my reading of the news. I mean, I don't have great sources in Washington, but that's, you know, when I hear the reports on that, I think Tulsi Gabbard and Pete Hegseth are in a lot bigger trouble than that. But they could all go through. It looks like one of the questions that I had prepared for this new Predictive News Quiz was whether Speaker Mike Johnson was going to hang on to his gavel, because it really looked up until yesterday like it was going to be very unlikely that he was going to. But then when Trump came out and gave him a full-throated endorsement yesterday, I took that question out of the Predictive News poll, because it just seems to me pretty obvious that this is Donald Trump's party. And they're going to do what, even though he only has going to have like an extremely slim majority in the House, he's going to be able to exert his will over the population, because in the House, the members, because anyone who crosses him gets threatened with a primary or ends up on the wrong side of MAGA. When you have someone like Liz Cheney, who was a very popular congresswoman in Wyoming until she was on the January 6th committee and became an anti-Trumper, and she got clobbered out there when she tried to run for re-election. So I think a lot of Republican congressmen are saying, well, what percentage is there in this for me to object to what's going on with Trump?
So if you say Hegseth, Patel, Gabbard, and Kennedy Jr., how many of them actually get those positions? I would say three of the four do. Don't ask me who's the odd person out, but you're probably right. It's either Tulsi or Pete Hegseth who don't get it, but I wouldn't bet on two. I think I would put money on three or four of those move through. You also have sports ones. The White Sox lost 121 games last season. Will they lose 110 games or more in 2025? 110 games or more. That would, but for the White Sox, just be cataclysmic. That would be historically bad. But it would be a 15-game improvement over last, an 11-game improvement over last year.
Right now, I have they will lose 110 games more. The voters are saying no, they will not lose that many. But it's a near 52-48 right now on the poll. There's only 211 votes so far, but right now, my voters are narrowly saying the White Sox are going to do better than 110. I don't know how. I mean, they got rid of their best pitcher and they've got some prospects coming up, but I don't see the prospects of that team right now. It doesn't look like. It doesn't look very good for them in this poll.
Doesn't look like they're going to be on paper any better, although even a bad team should be able to, you know, avoid losing 110 games. You ask, will Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce be in an item a year from now? That's a good question. That may be the most important question of all.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm going to say no. What's your thought?
Well, I'm going to say yes, and 82% of my readers so far are saying yes. But again, they're the same readers who are saying the Detroit Lions are going to win the Super Bowl by a pretty solid majority. And if you watch the Lions game last night, they looked pretty good against a pretty bad 49ers team.
Yeah.
I think they're too racked up by injuries to do that. I think we're going to look at the Chiefs or the Bills this year. Maybe the Vikings even. They're looking really good.
Getting back to the Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift thing.
Yeah.
I have no reason to think they won't be together, except celebrity couples make no sense to me. And it does seem to be a little performative. So we'll check back on this and other stories this time next year. And another podcast will drop next week from the Mincing Rascals. And Eric Zorn will send you his Substack newsletter, the Picayune Sentinel, if you email ericzorn@gmail.com. Okay, Mr. Z, thank you, sir.
Thanks, John. I'll talk to you soon.